Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, future AI robot overlords, welcome to the Gift of Gaming podcast. And on this week, we're just sitting down for a chat. Cue the music. Hey, it's me, your host, Darren Wade, and I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords. And today I'm joined by Craig the Critical Nolan. Craig, how are you?
I am very good, Darren. How are you today?
I'm quite good. It is an unbelievable day weather-wise, and that is so rare for here in Ireland.
I mean, the last couple of weeks have been pretty amazing, but, you know, yes, the joy continues, but, like, it's a very big... It's very rare in Ireland, or indeed Dublin, that this happens for this long. It's great to appreciate it. Yeah.
We love it. I guess my first question, because we don't really have a topic for today, Craig.
That's twice in a row, Darren. You're getting lazy, huh?
I know. Well, there were topics, but we weren't ready. I was hoping the guys would have played a bit more Civ 7, but Chris is he's put his foot down and he says he's not touching it until it's.
I know.
Like,
I listened to
DLC.
Last week's this morning. You know, I do my homework, like, you know.
Make sure we don't end up with the same thing twice. And then Kev has played it, but he hasn't gotten into it in a way that we could, you know, deep dive, which is a pity because I got really into Civ 7. I got into the dregs of it and. Was really enjoying it.
I'm thinking about it, but I want all those bugs you mentioned just completely ironed out.
Yeah,
I want the gameplay to be smooth sailing completely. Yeah. I don't want to like be building a thing and not knowing what it's doing. That's just a no.
That is, and like not all of it has been fixed, but the most recent update they had for it fixed a lot of the things I had a problem with, which was great. So it's on the up, but yeah, I don't think we'll be doing an episode on Civ 7 for a while, but sure, hey.
Maybe we can get the episode on Clair Obscur Expedition 33, because I'm playing it, you're playing it.
Kev's playing it.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So we have three, you know?
Yeah.
Classic
and I think
corner.
So let's not, we'll do a review, a games corner on it for sure.
Yes.
But let's not go into it too deeply. Spoiler free, your thoughts on it overall? You said you just finished Act 1.
I did, and like I heard yourself and Chris talking about it, but only kind of minor, like, 'cause he hasn't played it yet either, right? So, like, yeah, I've only played up to the end of Act 1. I literally finished that part last night, and it feels like very much like a third of the game has passed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, I'm really, really enjoying it, like, just visually, the combat system, the world, the way it's just so vague. I have massive gripes, like I do with most things, but, I mean... One of these things that I can already tell that this is going to be one of my games of the year, and it's mainly because if this was an €80 price tag game, I would tear it to shreds with lots of little things.
Yeah.
But lots of little things that annoy me.
Yeah.
But none of those things annoy me when it's a €50 game.
Yeah.
Not one of those things.
And it's such a breath of fresh air, because I saw the trailer for it at the Game Awards, made note of it, and been like, "This is really interesting. I'm very curious about this." And then kind of didn't really hear anything about it, and then saw the release trailer for it, and I was like, amazing, it's coming out next week. And I watched one or two reviews, or I watched a review, and I got about 2 minutes in, and I was like, actually, you know what, this looks good enough for me.
I was the exact same. I just was only a couple minutes to a review, and I was like, no, this seems like one of those games where less is more.
Yeah, and I enjoyed what I had seen in those first 2 minutes. I said, no, that's enough for me, I'll play it. And then it released, when it came out to PlayStation Plus, there was like a 10% off the moment it came out, so I paid €45 for it when it came out. And I was like, This game is so much better than so many fucking full price AAA games that I've played.
Yep.
It's such a breath of fresh air to be able to pay that kind of money and kind of say to yourself, wow, that's amazing. Because we had a talk ages ago as a group, when we were saying, like, if we were to do proper review of games, should we take into account? And your big thing was money.
My price is massively important, like, because all games aren't considered equal now, especially with the way you have consoles that aren't as strong as each other. Like with the Switch, they were releasing their games at €50 to €60, and then the PlayStation was €70 to €80. So I'm like, there's already a massive
discrepancy
there. So I'm kind of like, well, the PlayStation games should be 20%, 25% better just based on their price.
Yeah.
So like all my reviews generally favor Nintendo somewhat because I consider them €50 games.
Yeah.
You know, especially because I have the online membership, so that even if it was $59.99 on day one, I can get it for $50. And I review it as a €50 game, you know?
Yeah.
Which sometimes isn't fair, because Fire Emblem Three Houses, literally every character has like two animations of yay with their hands flailing or just the arms folded looking sad, like, you know? Whereas I'm watching these GTA 6 trailers and the characters have like thousands of animations, like, you know, and it's absolutely insane night and day how different they are, like, you know?
Yeah, amazing. And like, so for me, on that regards, it being £45, I think it's an absolute steal in terms of the amount of enjoyment of it.
Same.
I've finished Act 2.
Shit, you finished the second act.
Yeah.
You are flying through.
Flying through. But it's one of those things whereby Kev's been messaging me and he's gone into a lot of the... I love how it's real old school RPG and how it's done some things and that right from the get-go you can go
it
to
is,
areas
but,
that's...
Well, because a lot of people were like, oh, Craig, Sea of Stars, isn't that the game?
Yes. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a new modern RPG similar to this. However, in this game, you have lots of moves, lots of combinations, lots of things you can equip. In that game, you had like every character had two attacks
and it was,
for the first 10 hours.
It was such
and
a
like
pity.
Every battle is exactly the same.
Yeah.
This sucks. Yeah. And the reviews for that game are amazing. Anyone who gave that game a good score, go play fucking Expedition 33 and you'll go, what the hell was I thinking?
Yeah, why did I think that was a good RPG? Yeah, it's blown me away. But Kev has been doing this thing where he is any of those danger dungeons, which like you're obviously meant to come back to closer to end game.
I don't even entertain the idea of going in there.
Yeah, so
it's like I hate the idea of having to run away from every bad guy and or maybe just fight a bad guy for an hour just to kill him, knowing that any hit could kill me. No, that's a massive waste of my time.
But Kev is real. I like that he's into the hard mode of everything. Like even before he started this hard mode of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, he went and did all the hard VR missions.
Yeah.
Which I thought was incredibly impressive considering he didn't have, like his characters weren't leveled up like mine would have
been.
No,
no, well, they would be by the time, because even as soon as you complete the main game, even if you don't switch difficulty, you get the triple AP and you get the triple experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
no,
you level up fucking.
But
like,
he never
instantly.
Started a new game is what I mean, is that he, where he was.
I know, but you would have went back to chapter 12
to do those
side activities.
Yeah. But yeah, he's gone back and he's taken his time doing those bits and pieces, but I haven't had it in me in Expedition 33 to actually stick around and explore everything. I'm so narrative driven in this game because I love all the characters. I love where the story is going.
Do you love all the characters? Oh, well, I'm only through the first part of the game, you're through the second. But because there aren't too many moments of talking, like, you know, like, because the dungeons are quite long.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of the game, like I mentioned in that intro, I talk to every single NPC, and there's a lot of NPCs.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get on that boat, the amount of people you can talk to dries up massively. You know,
have you
to the point where only at very, very scripted events can you talk to your companions around the camp.
Yeah.
They usually only have one or two lines of dialogue,
but
and then
you,
it's over.
You know, have you seen the option where you're about, where you go to the campfire and it says sleep, remember objectives, and another option is check on your campmates?
Yes.
Have you clicked that?
Yes.
Every time? Because those have really good, I think, cutscenes most of the
time. I definitely must have missed a couple because I did think I talked to a bunch of the NPCs, you know, the characters in your camp.
Yeah.
And then when I went to the fire and it did say that check on team, I assumed that was just
a moment
pushing me over to talk to them before I go to sleep. So I probably did miss a couple at the beginning.
Because
but
for me, it's felt very organic in that like there was a lot of great stuff at the start. And I think it kind of quietened up a little bit
I think I may have missed out.
Yeah.
Because I have no idea any of the characters' motivations whatsoever. Like,
Well, I mean, and spoilers a little bit here in terms of the storyline. I think all of their motives are just to survive.
Live in a world where they can probably do that much. But I don't really... Their personalities aren't really shining through.
Yeah.
You know, if you get me, because it's mostly just, oh shit, we're going to die if we don't do this.
Yeah.
We're going to die if we don't do that. I can't, everyone's saying the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I
get it's that type of game, but like generally I would want to just see those moments of, you know, characterization to kind of rise a little to the surface.
Yeah.
And I saw a little bit with Gustav, but even he like, you know, there's just, it's very much like, hey, will we skim some stones, you know? These tiny little moments, they're not having deep, meaningful conversations.
Yeah, which...
And I guess they want to slowly reveal more about the world themselves, but I'd love if the characters just talked about the world, because they have all the answers and we don't.
Yeah,
but they aren't telling us anything.
But I think that's the point, isn't it? That you're there for the ride until things are like drip fed to you. And in this game, it's in a way where I haven't found it frustrating that I don't know things. It's just this desire for me to be like, what was the fracture? What's going on? Like,
but I mean, like
play.
The character, like even the Gustav, he's a researcher, you know, like he's this engineer, he's this inventor. And then you meet these kind of whimsical creatures that nobody's ever seen before. And one of the girls is like, I'm going to ask them a bunch of questions. But she doesn't do that.
Yeah.
She doesn't ask them anything.
Is she like off screen asks
like,
them or
maybe
some
it's
shit,
off screen, but it's because they're protecting us from knowing too much.
Yes.
But none of the characters are getting anything and they're not pushing for answers. And like that's the type of thing would never happen in a movie or show. But in a game, it's quite prevalent because they use it as a mechanic to kind of keep you at bay.
Yes.
But it takes away a little bit
because
I really want the characters to enjoy themselves, to have those moments of glory or have those just small little happy moments knowing that you're going to your end here. I want it to be more like the first Last of Us game where Joel and Ellie really, like, they saw a giraffe and it's like, it's just a big deal and this lovely, beautiful moment in this otherwise brutal world. Whereas Expedition 33 is very much a brutal world.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to just those moments of happiness.
Yeah.
But they're kind of shortchanging it a little bit.
I think you will enjoy Act 2 in that I think some of your complaints, not to the extent that I would like them to be addressed, but I think some of your complaints are addressed in Act 2 in terms of that characterization, a little bit more of a relationship development between the characters, I think happens a bit more in Act 2.
Great.
Which, because that's, like I said, I've been on Act 2 and I never deviated from the narrative in Act 2. Act 1, I was kind of messing about on the world map and everything like that. But in Act 2, I was so gung-ho on the rail to be like, let's figure out what the fuck's going on. I love all these chats and everything. Yeah. Great game. We're going to do a fucking Games Corner
on
it for sure.
One more thing on the combat before I get on get off this topic, because I do feel like turn-based RPGs, and like Chris was saying at the very beginning of the last podcast, like, oh, I'm sick of turn-based RPGs. Yeah. And I get that they are becoming just attack, magic, elementals.
Not anymore.
Like, and like, there's nothing really like, and again, that Sea of Stars game, everyone says how great it is, but it's just attack, fire, wind.
Yeah, it's very boring.
Like, I know what that is. I've played that a million times. Whereas in this, like, every attack costs a certain amount of AP, and doing certain attacks gets you more AP. You know, if you're burning something and then you can get more AP off of that.
Yeah.
And like, it's just so refreshing because the combinations of attack really work with each other.
In every single battle,
it feels like there's synergy with almost every single one of your six moves.
Absolutely. Like, you know? And in every single battle, you're engaged for the entirety of the battle. It's not as if I'm sitting there just holding the X button, getting all my characters to attack. It's every move and every dodge and every, as you said, strategy or skill
and
you're using
watching
is building.
Single enemy attack, because everything can be dodged or parried if you get it right.
Yeah.
But it's not so, like in Mario, Paper Mario, if you dodge an enemy's attack, you'll always be able to dodge that. You've just mastered it instantly. If you do it once, you've mastered it instantly. Whereas in Expedition 33, not only do they have very similar looking attacks, but sometimes they delay before they hit, knowing that, like, the people who made the game know you're trying to parry, so that sometimes they'll delay the hit, you know?
There was nothing more embarrassing for me playing that game where a relatively new enemy comes along and they've got like a 3-hit combo, and I hit the first two parries perfectly, being like, I know what you're doing here, and then I automatically hit the third parry, and you see your character make the movement, but the enemy isn't attacking, and you know you fucked
standing
this.
There,
and you're like,
and then he, and then like, he hits so much harder than the first two hits, and you're like, well done, game, you got me.
It's great, love that game, can't wait. We'll do I think when myself and Kev are kind of maybe at the same area in the game, we'll do a review.
But as a big RPG fan, I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially at its price, I think that's great.
And speaking of price, actually, one of the questions, and you brought it up there talking about Nintendo, now that the dust to settle a little bit, I kind of wanted to ask you. I got pre-order for the Switch 2.
So we're both getting Switch 2 day one.
And I wasn't initially going to do it. When I realized I'd missed the kind of the first batch of pre-orders, I was like, maybe I'll just see about when I get it. And then I went on to Reddit and someone had said Smith's has it, you know, pre-orders up. So I was like, oh, I'll chance me. I mean, it had been up for 2 hours, so I was like, well, all these could be fucking gone again. Yeah. But I went on, and lo and behold, there was some there. But you mentioned there Nintendo €50, €60 game prices. Mario Kart's 9, let's say if you were to go get the digital version, the standard version of Mario Kart, you're paying now €80 for
Mario
Kart.
Is it 80 or 90?
It's 90 for the physical copy, 80 for the digital.
And is that for all games?
I'm assuming that's their
standard.
Okay,
I thought it was always going to be 90 for, because digital and physical, they've never has a discrepancy between them before.
So
it's
Nintendo,
always the same.
Nintendo's making a couple of big steps here that I think will, personally, will affect the industry.
I mean,
a
physical
the board.
Copy should be more expensive
because
just
of
if
what
you're getting
goes
a box and guidebook or whatever. Like,
but see, this is the thing. In times past, you would have gotten a guidebook. They don't exist anymore. Like, when you get a physical
copy, it actually
copy,
sucks that they don't.
Yeah,
like, it's a big part of the game. Like,
you know? You open a box now, and it's just like either like a, there might be a code for a further digital download thing, and then there's just the game either disc, or in the case of Nintendo, there's just the game cartridge. That's it. And like, those Nintendo Switch boxes look so empty because the cartridge is so small.
It's
when you open it,
tiny.
It's just the cartridge, nothing else. It's bigger
just so you can see it on the shelf. Like,
Otherwise, it'd be pointless.
Otherwise, it would be smaller.
So tell me, how are you worried about? And I know, like, you may have gotten, I'm assuming you got the Mario Kart bundle when you pre-ordered.
Yes, of course.
Which
doesn't
me,
look in any way different.
No,
€50
cheaper than buying them separately, I think. Are you worried about Mario Kart being €90 physical copy and what that means for Nintendo games? Like, based on your review, because you now have a Mario Kart that is, what, like 30% more expensive than it used to be?
Yes.
How, I mean, you say it has to be 30% better.
It's going to be far, like, because Mario Kart 8, when I got it, like, not only did it come out with 32 tracks, which is pretty good for, like,
For bass.
Yeah, up until the GameCube, up until the Wii version, they all came out with 16 tracks. The Wii gave 32, but most of them were bad. Like, they're not good. Whereas Mario Kart 8 gave 32 out the gate and then immediately promised two DLC bundles. One showing Hyrule, Link as a playable character. And you're like, that is revolutionary. That was like, oh my God, we're getting Smash Kart.
You know,
like, we're getting Nintendo Kart. That was, to most people, the real future of Mario Kart. Now they've instead gone open world, and I'm like, I don't think that was a good pivot, you know?
Do you not think that was a good pivot?
I think you should have fucking had a Kirby and a Kirby level and a Pikachu and a Nintendo level and bring all the characters in and make it Mario Kart, but it's really Nintendo Kart. People would drop top dollar for that shit. But the DLC that had, like, the Hyrule Temple and all that, that did almost as good as the actual game itself. Like, pretty much everyone who owned the game got the DLC because it's just such wonderful DLC. Had Excitebike, all these great other games that associated with it, and it was a really good price. I think it was like €15 for both batches, so like €6-7 each for like eight tracks. So 16 tracks for like €15.
And then they dropped,
like, that is absolutely incredible.
They dropped, like, well, I wouldn't say recently enough, but like 2 years ago, didn't they drop more tracks for Mario Kart 8?
They Wasn't did there another? They had a Mario Kart mobile game, you know?
Right.
So they dropped a lot of those tracks
into it
onto
well.
Mario Kart 8 and then added some more from, like, because there wasn't any new tracks other than that, like, Ninja one and maybe one or two
right,
more.
Right, okay, yeah.
But, like, the other 48, 45 tracks were all old ones that they'd recycled, like, from the DS.
Smash Kart, Nintendo Kart, I'd be right up there, get all the characters in.
Yeah.
I'd love that. But
don't get me wrong, I will probably really enjoy Mario Kart 9, but I cannot in any way seeing it reviewing well, because it's, first off, based on that, there's 7 cups, so there's 28 tracks in the game. That's what I think. It could be that I'm wrong, but from the menus I've seen, there's 7, which means 28 levels. That's not enough. I'm going to pin you for that.
I
don't give a shit if I can drive off roads to get from one track to the other. That's nothing.
But to stop you there, in the Mario Kart 8, we started off with 32 base, right? Were those 32 all brand new, never before seen tracks?
No, but a few of them were none of them were just one for one remakes.
Of course, they touched them.
They were
up.
All brand newly recognized. Like, even the layouts were different. They were called the same. They had the same name, but like the Rainbow Road from the N64 was like a complete night and day difference.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
It didn't resemble the original track really in any way.
Just
other
in
than
terms
music
of its shape,
and overall design.
Do you not think then, because we're getting, what, 4 tracks less at base game for Mario Kart World, but each and every single track is a brand new iteration. None of them are, and they take, what was it they said? They're taking...
But what is good, I don't think any of the tracks have laps. Aren't they the long versions?
No. Like, I think how the game works is that, let's say per cup you've got 4 tracks.
Yeah.
And in those, there's certain modes, but if you went to do a normal championship, this is how I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, giftygamingpodcast@gmail.com. I think you have your 3 laps normal for your given tracks, and there's 4 to a cup. And I think the interesting thing is that when you finish your 3 laps, you just have to navigate to the next track, which isn't like that far.
But at what point do you go off your track?
You finish the race, and then I think that, like that, I'm assuming that thing opens up, or, you know, that area just kind of opens up and you drive off to the next one.
So you're not making much sense there, Darren.
No.
Why would if it's open world, why would it just suddenly open up?
No. It's putting you on the line to get to the next track on the cup, which is kind of like the new thing in between the cups. But what you then get is there's the knockout stage, and that isn't lapped. That's, I think, you get one lap of the track and the whole thing is the drive, and you kind of drive to the next track. And
that's quite possible.
It's more organic, I think. They kind of, all the tracks blend. Whereas if you do a normal cup, it's 3 laps. And then when the race is finished, you have to do this bonus thing of driving to the next thing.
Okay, well, I was going to give them a bit of shit. Because, like, they have started to introduce more and more tracks, like the Wario Mountain. What was it, Wario Stadium or Wario Mountain? Where, like, you just go from top to bottom.
Oh, Mount Wario.
Mount Wario,
our favorite finishing
track. That's my favorite level ever. And it's just, like, you start at the top of the mountain and you get to the bottom. And, like, there's no laps. It's just you get from there to the bottom. And I would like every single track to be like that.
Yeah.
You know? Granted, it would make bananas kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, you never come back around.
You could
to those.
Never come back around and hit them, like, you know, so I get the whole lap.
So but I think what they've done is we get, like, in the mode, the knockout mode, where you do, like, that whole race, rather than lasting 3 minutes or 4 minutes like your 3 lapped standard race would be. I think that knockout mode, people are saying, is like 10 minutes long, because it's literally like you surviving over the course of, I think it's 6 tracks, six tracks, essentially surviving to be in the top 3 to win the last race, whatever it might be. So I think they've kind of taken the best of both worlds. worlds in that. Now, I haven't had a chance to, of course, play it. We're not that in the industry, unfortunately, not yet. We didn't get a chance to play it, but I'm looking at it and I've seen some people play it, and I think it actually... the open world part, for me, was an interesting spin.
Yeah,
but I don't know if it'll catch me in the way,
because I'm never going to drive around if I'm not racing. I would do that once to check, and then I know factually that I would never do it again.
Yeah, and I think the only good thing is if you're doing online races, you are put into the world map as part of your lobby, and I think probably drops random areas of the map as part of your lobby.
So they're predicting big loading times. So like, well, at least you can have fun in the open world, which is fair.
It's perfect for me because that's the only way I think I will explore the open world.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just like turn on my own car and be like...
In this 5 minutes it takes to match you up. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, holy crap, I've like went from one side of the island to the other.
So I'm guessing you don't think this game is going to be 30% better than Mario Kart 8?
No, not anywhere close. I think it would be lucky to be as good, just because I think like the jump from the Wii version in SD to the HD look of the Mario Kart 8 was gorgeous, you know, and absolutely amazing. And I don't think the leap is quite there.
No.
Even when people were shown it on the Switch 2, not everyone was even convinced that was Mario Kart 9. You know,
like, yeah,
the fact that you can't tell isn't very good.
I think
the only
reason people were able to tell is that how they've drawn the characters have changed. And I noticed
Donkey Kong looks different.
Donkey Kong looks like the Donkey Kong from his own game now. So yeah. Nintendo have kind of taken...
Yeah, they've taken it from Rare.
Yeah,
and they've reclaimed Donkey Kong for themselves, which makes sense,
fair,
I suppose.
Yeah, and I think some of the, like, you know, Mario looks a little bit different. It's kind of what they did with Super Mario Brothers Wonders, where that was the first time in a long time playing a 3D Mario where they definitely were animated different. Like, it wasn't your standard Super Mario Brothers Wii U, whatever those ones, and they all kind of look the same throughout, like probably about a decade worth of video games, they all look the same. So I'm glad they're taking that stance. But now that the hype's kind of died down and we're not getting, you know, we now know what the Switch 2 is like. It's coming out in what, like 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Are you excited to pick up a Switch 2?
I'm excited to play this new Mario Kart, and I am excited of the idea that I'll have a more powerful Switch 2 to, you know, play Smash Brothers on. And like, I would really, I know it won't, but I would really appreciate it if I put my Smash Brothers cartridge in and it just loaded faster, and I'd be like, wow, that was money well spent.
And it might do, who knows, maybe it will.
It's because with all the DLC I have on Smash, it's like turning it on can take about 3 or 4 minutes
just before,
because
it starts.
I have every tiny bit of DLC that there is. I have everything, you know, so that's all added on to the already massive game cartridge. So if that was even shrimp down a little, I'd be like, look at me, I'm after winning, you know. This is a massive
this
moment.
Is enough. I'm interested in terms of what they'll bring out in the future. I think it's a bit of a weak opening for them.
Oh, I think if you're going to ask me though, overall, do I think Switch 2 is going to be a success? I think it's going to be a massive failure.
Really? Massive failure?
Well, not, I think it's going to be a failure, and like, not in line with Wii U, but maybe in line with GameCube or Nintendo 64 failures, you know.
I think
because they don't have the lineup. There's no Mario, there's no Zelda, and you're not going to get a Smash Brothers this time next year. And the Switch had all three of those things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it was so weird and new. Like the first time we'd ever seen this thing that you could take out of a dock and play it handheld, or play it on your TV if you wanted that easy.
And
whereas
that's
the Switch 2 has
the norm,
no,
you know, with, like, everyone copied them.
I don't think it'll be a failure because we've waited so long for Switch 2, but I think it'll be a failure in Nintendo's eyes, but I don't think
Nintendo make the least amount of games out of any of the three consoles.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
100%, yeah.
Okay, and then imagine that their flagships, Zelda and Mario, they probably have... They're maybe 1-2 years into production of those games.
Yeah.
Which, based on new modern day, game
could
development
be another,
times,
could be another
3 years talking
from
5 years
now.
Probably for the next Zelda. You're talking probably 3 or 4 for the next Mario, because they did Wonder. If you
not
want to call
ago.
That great, fine. For
it
me,
was
all right. That's not my cup of tea. But you're not going to get the Mario Odyssey sequel for at least 3 years. You're not going to get a new Smash Brothers for probably about 4 years. And you're going to get a Metroid, which if you put up next to a Doom game, looks like fucking a baby in its pram.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just like, well, what do we have now?
I feel so sorry for the Metroid fans who were just waiting for 4 to finally
If you put those two games side by side, you would like, why would anyone ever play Metroid?
I watched that trailer and I was like, if this is what people have waited a generation for, I feel so nothing about that game.
Because it just looks like Metroid Prime 1, but
slightly
better graphics. Slightly
better
graphics. That's not good enough, guys.
Yeah. Doesn't look as
exciting.
You've
got to do better.
Yeah,
you know?
A real pity. Speaking, while we're still on the price of games, you mentioned GTA 6 there. We got a new trailer for it recently, but before we get into the trailer and stuff like that, I'm curious, what price do you think GTA 6 releases at? Given that Nintendo have their games at 90, Rockstar looks, by the looks of this trailer, looks like they've thrown the fucking kitchen sink at this game.
Yeah. Good question to ask me, because I do base my reviews on price. And I think if GTA 6 is under 150 euro, then I'm probably going to think it's an amazing game.
Wow, you know? Really? Okay.
Because it already has way more than any other, you know?
Yeah.
It even has, like I was just bitching about, what to me now, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is the pinnacle of, like, value for money.
Yes.
Even though it's an 80 euro game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm watching GTA 6 and the fucking, their bellies are wriggling and there's fucking the beer bottles are like slapping together while he's walking. Whereas if you play in Rebirth, similar to what I said, like the characters' animations, I was watching the High Wind getting fixed, not the High Wind, the Tiny Bronco, and all the characters are just sitting, just waiting, and it's doing like this kind of transition animations because they just don't have the animations to showcase the different characters doing things.
Yeah.
They focus more on music.
Yeah.
And like GTA is going to have the music, but it also has the fucking the mechanics. Like in the trailer alone, the characters are hugging each other, jumping up and down. There's thousands of little animations that I'm just like, wow, like no other games just can't do that.
And
like,
that
it's so far ahead.
And that trailer, because when I watched it, I was convinced it was just all the cinematics from the game because it looked so good. And Rockstar came out and confirmed it's a mix of gameplay and cinematics. And I'm like,
I'm just like, I don't believe it. If anyone could do it, it would be you.
Yeah.
You know?
If any one of those scenes is gameplay, it all looks fucking unbelievable. Like there's not one of those scenes that I watched in that trailer that I looked at it and said, oh yeah, that's definitely gameplay and it looks a bit whatever. I was watching the whole thing being like, this all has to be a fucking CGI fucking cutscene. It looks way too fucking good. What does GTA, apart from like the graphics looking amazing, right?
Like I do think it'll be maybe 90 euro. Like if you were to ask me, I think it'll be 10 euro dearer than whatever the highest normal game is.
Right.
Enough not to piss too many people off.
Right.
Or not enough to piss too many people off, but like they need to get, you know, get a little bit of money back.
Yeah,
you know?
I think if it's anything under 100 euro, it's cheaper than I expected. If it comes in under 100 quid for the base game, I'm not talking about like your deluxe fucking edition. I think base
game, they do launch a bunch of fucking DLC because they deserve it. Like, and make cosmetics cost whatever you need to make them cost, but get your money with your GTA. I mean, GTA 6, there will be an online
100%,
and they'll be making fucking endless amounts of money on that, and they deserve it. Like, so I hope they do that.
What does the game need, or what would you love to see in the game? Because the last time Grand Theft Auto was around was fucking two generation consoles ago,
it's
PS3.
Yeah.
We got GTA 5, and the big thing about that was heists, I guess, in terms of that's what you were.
Or being able to switch characters.
Yeah.
You can do that too.
It looks like we've got two characters that we know of, at least anyway. What does the game need to have in it for you to say, like, fucking hell, this is. Apart from the graphics, which look, don't get me wrong, that looks like it's what the PS5
is. That
is
my main thing, in all honesty, but I like that kind of question. And for me, GTA has always been the game where I'm like, where is the industry at, just based on how good that game looks. And generally, I want that kind of real-life simulator, like how close to real life can
I make this? Yeah.
You know, while still being in the real world. And like to make that bigger, we need to be able to go into more of the places in the open world.
Yes.
And I think GTA San Andreas to this day has done that the best, because you could go into people's homes at night. There was lots of shop stores, there was garages. And like even in GTA 5, that was tailored back quite a bit. Because in GTA San Andreas, you'd go to bowling alleys and go on dates and stuff like that. You know, like all of that was pulled back. Like GTA 4, that's almost non-existent.
Yeah.
On GTA 5, there's some of that stuff, but nowhere near the level that San Andreas had. I'm looking for GTA 6 to really go in on all that.
Yeah.
To, like, if you're on the fucking street, I want to be able to go into every single one of those five shops on the corner.
Street.
Like, and I want to go in and someone be like, hey, you want some pizza, you know, or whatever. Like, just something like that.
Do you want
to go into a strip club and I want to see titties and boobies and bush and everything and, like, dancers flying around on poles. I want to be entertained. I want to go into a movie cinema and actually watch a movie like in Red Dead 2. Like, I want it all. I want everything we have in our culture in this game. I know that's asking way too much, but I want it.
But we have, like, I mean, I don't know how long the game's been in development, per se. Like, I'm not going to say it's been in development for 13 years or however long it's been since we've got GTA 5, but I'm assuming it's probably been in the works since just, I would say, pre-release of the new generation of consoles. So, like, maybe it's been been worked on, like, for 5 years.
You don't think they were doing Red Dead 2, like, a lot of that?
I mean, Red Dead 2 was the middle of what?
That was 2017. 2017,
yeah. So, like, the middle, or, like, what you say, would you say, like, the third quarter of the PS4's life cycle? So, like, it's been a long time since we've had, like, what? Yeah, that's 8 years ago.
We needed it, and it's a whole year and 2 weeks away.
Yeah, because it'll be my birthday present for sure, because it'll be, what, 26th of May, 3 days after my birthday. That'll be a birthday present pre-order for sure. I'll be getting that. But for me, I would love for... One of the things I really enjoyed played in the old games, San Andreas, was robbing places. Like
robbing at nighttime. Yeah, when you got in that van, you could go into their homes.
You could go into homes, but you could go into shops and hold a gun up to someone.
And
if you held it for long enough, cash would appear on the register or whatever else. And I, as a kid, loved being able to do that. And that was what I spent.
It's like a quick getaway. You're like, drive. And you think you're a big shot.
Because like my brother's
like 500 and cash.
Yeah, it was, so San Andreas, whatever year that came out, I was like young enough-ish, but my brothers had their slots on it. And because I loved doing that so much, they would ask, they'd be like, yeah, go on my slot, but like, just don't, you know, don't get wrecked or die or whatever, but like rob as many shops as you want. So I'd go and make them a couple of grand easy, and then they just continue on their file, but like they'd be going around, you know, the ghetto or like, you know, Grove Street with all like this
Grove
extra
Street
cash.
For life.
So I really love this kind of thing where, because it looks like your two characters are criminals, like, you know, just like petty criminals in a way.
They're
possibly
lovers, which I don't like.
You don't like this?
I don't like, because just like in Red Dead Redemption 2, when you went into a fucking, you go into a saloon and all the girls like, hey, you want to have some free time? And he's like, I'm a married man. I'm like, I didn't want to be an outlaw to have my main character going, I'm a married man, and give, you know, like, what is the point of this? Like, you know, there's absolutely no point in having a character that behaves this way. And even Arthur Morgan is like, for the time period, he's like a really nice guy. Like, and would never do any of that. I want the proper debauchery and like crazy, like, villainous behavior, you know, like
I think it's
I want to be able to at least, you know, have the opportunity to, like, even it, not necessarily an NPC, but characters like that you do missions for that you could ring up potentially and go out on a date with and build a relationship.
Like give San Andreas, kind of three
or four different options, you know, that you could have, male or women. You know, I don't discriminate. Let's do both. You know, I probably do both just to say it. Like, you know, be great. But I really wish that, rather than have a, because I know they're going to be a lovey-dovey couple, and, you know, ultimately one's going to betray the other. But like, I would rather them not be that. Just be mates,
I'm
so that I can pursue my own romantic interests.
Maybe you still won't be able to. Maybe that's how it all, you know. Maybe
I bet they won't. I bet the reason they've done this is because they aren't going to.
I think they've done that for. That's what I'm excited about in a sense that when I saw that these two were very clearly a couple, I was like, oh, that opens the door for lots of like narrative. What would you say, like drama that's going on, and like as you said, like one betraying the other could be like the big, like the Lance Vance of GTA six type scenario that I love to see. So I'm excited in that. It looks like they've gone a bit stronger, maybe with a proper narrative for the game, because I was never interested in online GTA 5. I just liked playing the games for the story, like
I love the story in GTA 5, and I think they did a great job by having three completely different characters to allow you to focus on such a variety of different mission types. Because you had the rich guy, you had the kind of the poor kid who's just looking to rustle up a bit of
the
money,
and then
you had the
insane
psychopath who's just like murdering everyone, you know.
So
I would love a bit of variety like that in GTA 6, like, you know.
I think going back to the thing about what I'd love it to do in terms of, I think I was talking about like robbing stores, I'd love it to be a thing whereby you could like plan it. Like that, you have the two characters. Let's say, like plan the robbing.
Oh,
like,
plan.
Like,
yeah.
If you're talking about like, there's
the story missions that they had in GTA 5.
No, like that you could, but you could do it on your own time. Like rob just stores, like rob ammunition, rob the pizza place, whatever it might be. But if you want to get like, you can control the two characters. Let's say not simultaneously, but switch between them. You know, get the girl to guard the door or whatever, so no one comes in, and then you can like hold up the dude and all that
kind of
stuff.
So maybe give them kind of AI commands.
To be like,
and then while you're switching between, you know,
because so, it'll make that for me.
Robin. That's a cool idea, because I don't think with the others, you weren't really with the other characters other than the main story missions.
No, and
you couldn't really interact with them.
They were
outside.
Completely controlled in missions, but you were doing it together. You played as one, like the mission was based off one of the characters, and the other two might be there, or one of them might be there, but they were completely controlled by the game.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But
that's
a
good idea.
I love
if
you could just like walk around with the two of them and say, we're going to rob this place. Right, you watch the door. I'll go hold up the perp. You know, and just to make it a bit more like in the free roaming aspect of it, that you can still do like your own kind of your own missions in a way. I love if I had really high quality, you know, AI stuff like that, that you could be like, yeah, okay, I'm going to plan this shit. I'm going to be a fucking millionaire by robbing pizza places all day long. Like, that's a great idea. Yeah.
What if you get it wrong, Darren? So here's my big, big question. And like, because modern games, they all seem to do this now. They autosave. And you only have one save file, and it autosaves. For me, a big thing in GTA is saving my game and then going off and wrecking everything and then reloading so that none of that saves.
Yeah.
And I'm
just
wondering,
is
this going to be the first GTA game that does not allow you to do that?
No, I'd say no, because I think in every game that has an autosave feature, you can turn autosave off. So that might be, so you could turn on GTA 6 and the standard might be an autosave, but you can probably go into the menu and turn autosave off.
You reckon?
I'd say so.
I don't know. I think I they may of, limit us.
I can't think
one.
Of a game that I've played where I wasn't able to turn, not that there's been too
Expedition
many games.
Expedition 33.
You can't turn autosave off?
I don't think so. You can't even save. It just always autosaves.
Oh, so but it saves a certain yeah. So it saves at certain points. Like so, you if you pick up an item in it.
I'm
saves,
just giving you an example
to,
of the most recent game yeah, I've played, that's, in which, that's right, in which I point. Couldn't save.
No, but I think that, though. So that's a different. I think you'll definitely be able to save the game. I think Expedition 33 is the exception to the rule in that it's one of the only games I've come across where I haven't don't have a save option.
You can then in Red Dead 2, there are multiple save files.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, there was multiple save files, and you could turn autosave off. And one of the funny things that my brother did, not the one who's on the podcast, but my other brother who loves playing GTA, but he played GTA like it was a weird way to play it. He turned autosave off, but if he ever killed someone innocently, he would turn off the game. So at the stats when he finished, I think it was probably Vice City where he was really gung-ho on this, but he finished Vice City and it finished it's like civilians killed, it was zero.
What a coward.
So he was just like, if he ever killed anybody,
he knows they're video game characters.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But it was just an interesting way to play the game, but he turned autosave off for that. That would be too annoying for me because
he added probably
so
about 10 hours of nothingness to his playtime.
It was a weird way to do it, but like I would assume
I don't condone that type of behavior. I think
GTA,
you're a fool
you
for doing
yeah.
it.
I mean, if it's of GTA of all games, it's kind of like that's the thing. Yeah, you do. Yeah. But no, I would say you will get an option either to turn autosave off or there will be a couple of save files. Like Red Dead had a couple of save files in it. At least that I can remember. I hope so. But yeah, I'd be surprised. But I'm excited for it. I didn't think I would be excited for it, but after that trailer and then coming out and saying
I liked the trailer, but I'm not excited for it. And I don't think you should ever show a trailer a year before the game comes out.
Well, no.
Because
so,
you build hype and then that's gone.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's going
nowhere.
I think that was more to the fans than the fact that they delayed.
People aren't pre-ordering this today.
No. But they delayed the game and like whatever it was, a week later they put out a trailer. I think that was literally to be like, we're sorry the game
Well, then don't put up the first trailer, you know? Like this is the second trailer, right? They should have waited and showed this is the first trailer. You know?
Yeah, no.
I mean, was the game supposed to come out next month or something?
The game was meant to... So it said it was anywhere between August and... What did it say? Autumn 2025 was the original. So it could have been anywhere between
August the first trailer should never have happened. You know?
Well, I mean, it shouldn't have happened if they felt at any point in time that they weren't going to meet their 2025 release.
For sure. Because, I mean, like the Switch, they only did their direct last month and showed the Switch.
Yeah.
And now it's out next month.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because you get hype and then
you don't have
you
to
still
have
the momentum. It doesn't just go nowhere.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think... So when they released the first trailer, my assumption would be is that they did not know when they put out the first trailer that they weren't going to hit 2025. And I think as time went on, they were like, this isn't feasible. And they had to announce the delayed, which everyone was like, oh, it's delayed, blah, blah, blah. And then they were like, well, here's what it's going to look like, so shut your mouths. And I was like, fair.
I mean,
fair.
I agree that that's what happened, but I still... companies should just stop showing trailers so early because your hype goes nowhere if you don't release the game.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
because
people are going to talk about it until they stop talking about it. And
the funny thing about the Switch 2 with Nintendo was that they announced the Switch 2, but that was, and we said it before, that was clearly just shut up and leave us alone. There is a Switch 2 because that was like a, here you go, here's like a 40-second thing of the Switch and you'll see about Mario Kart 9. Yes, the Switch 2 is a real thing. Leave us alone and we'll give you the details later.
Exactly, yeah.
It just felt like a real like fucking shut up, here's the Switch 2. Whereas had they not had so many people being like, where's the Switch 2? Why isn't it ready yet? They probably just would have done the direct and never had that initial announcement trailer.
And then
like,
we'd have less time to wait, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
But I like that type of system. You know, I'm not a big fan of the whole wait and see, you know? It's just... I mean, what do I have to do? Just go back and play GTA 5 now for a year, you know? Like, I might do it, but it's not going to last a year.
I was only looking at it on the other day in Reddit, and they had pictures of... Because I always thought GTA 5 looked good.
It looks great.
Yeah.
It probably looks better than most PS4 games.
But the funny thing about it is they put... there's a picture of a random character, an NPC, in a pool somewhere in GTA 5, and it's that picture, and it's... Side by side was the picture of your main character, whoever she is, chilling out by the pool with a cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at the two pictures being like, mother of God, the graphical upgrade.
But that's only because we assume that this GTA 6 thing is real, and I still can't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't really believe it. It's just way too good to be true.
Yeah.
Because it looks 10 times better than every other game ever made.
But the interesting thing about what, hats off to Rockstar, Red Dead Redemption 2 was a 2017, 2018 game, whatever it might have been, and it was out and played perfectly fine on your standard.
Played perfectly fine? That's a fucking...
What do you mean?
I mean, the controls.
No, glitches. Sorry. So in terms of what I mean to say is that, like, it had like a jank, like Bethesda or whatever had jank, but you turned it on and the game from start to finish worked. Should I mean you weren't playing it on your base PS4 and it was a really shitter version compared to the PS4 Pro. Agreed. It was the same across the board, but it was very, very impressive that in 2017, like, I turn on Red Dead Redemption 2 the odd time now and I'm like, God, this game looks fucking amazing. Yeah. Still, like,
yeah, visually great
gameplay. Yeah. Yes, of course, is jank, and even for 2018, it was probably a little bit kind of old for what it should have been maybe in 2018, but like, I still turn on that game sometimes and be like, this game looks fucking unbelievable. So if anybody could do it,
yeah, I mean, they are, for me, they're the leaders in terms of visual design and, like, you know, moving the ball forward for the others to kind of do the same, even though the indies have really taken off since GTA 5.
There's been a lot of competition.
This is the AAA, but the indies have risen to the top in some ways.
Or like debut, like small studios coming out with absolute bangers, like Claire Obscure's Expedition, of course, as well. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it is a year away, but what can we do? I mean,
I know what I'll do. I'm going to play GTA 5 from start to finish.
You reckon?
I'd say I will, yeah. I have that buzz, and I'm annoyed at them for giving, because I really just want to play it now.
Am
I going to put this energy?
You have to wait a year. Yeah.
I either kill somebody, or I go and fucking play GTA 5. Like, what are they doing to me? Like, I'm joking about
this. Oh, I hope so.
Just in case that's necessary.
But if anything comes out, we'll know who it was. Do you think, I mean, I don't know if I could play GTA 5 today. I know it's the game,
I mean,
still looks good.
I can and I will. I bet I'll have a great time too.
People might not like this. GTA 5 for me, I never finished the full game for, only because, and I think I mentioned this to you before, we were hanging out a while ago, and I said the game was full of people shouting start to finish. And that, by the time I got to the end of GTA 5, I was like, I'm so sick of this dialogue. It's just people shouting at each other.
It's Hollywood, like, baby, that's what they do.
Yeah, to an extent. But, like, I mean, like...
But it portrays everyone as though, like, they're pieces of shit as well, which I like, because I don't particularly Hollywood people.
No, but every... So, like, and, like, when you think about, like, the dialogue you had between characters in GTA 5 versus the likes of, let's say, Red Dead Redemption, in terms of, like, how you create a narrative and the relationships in Red Dead, and I know the totally different kinds of stories,
different tones. Like, I very much believe, and I go into this with the idea that every single person in GTA 5 is a bad person. Guy.
It
makes me feel a bit better about killing everyone, like, you know, because it's one of those worlds where everyone's a piece of shit, you know.
And it's just, I remember playing, it was at one point that I think what killed me, there was a Trevor mission, and I can't remember, I think it was, I loaded a pickup truck with dynamite to blow it up somewhere, and it was, I knew, because you know the way sometimes you have to go over to someone to do their mission, because you've completed, let's say, everything with Michael and you've completed everything with Franklin, so you have to play Trevor now to do this to move the game forward.
Yeah,
and I remember dreading it, because I was like, I love Trevor at the start, but he's just so fucking insane that I was like, oh god.
Yeah,
and
he's a bad dude.
He came on, and with the moment the way it went from the world map and it zooms into the character and then it plays where you are, he kicked down like the door of his caravan and was effing and blinding this person, and I was like, I've had too much of this, and I hope GTA 6 tones that back.
It does look like they are
a little bit.
It does look like,
because I'd like people to have normal fucking conversations. None of the conversations in GTA 5 were normal conversations. Not a single one. Everything was just like fucking mental shouting. I couldn't deal.
But
with
it is funny. Like, it's a funny humor filled kind of game, you know.
Of course, to an extent, I felt, and I'm just a bit of a dry shite in terms of like not finding that funny the whole way through. But it was like they had this. And I wouldn't call it slapstick per se, but they had a tone for GTA 5.
Massive. Yeah.
And they never deviated from that in a way that I was like, I don't like these characters in any way anymore. And I have to enjoy the game I'm playing, I have to have some sort of affinity with the main characters. I mean, Franklin, to somewhat, in GTA
Franklin's
5, was
a good
all right.
Character. Yeah. Michael's all right. I feel sorry for him because his family are
shitheads. No, but Michael's a shithead as well. Like,
a little bit, but like, he's kind of at that age.
And every
scene
that Michael was in with anything to do with his family, they were all just fucking shouting at each other. And I was like, this game is nothing but shouting. So I hope for GTA 6's sake, it's like, that tone, like, we've grown up from that tone a little bit, I hope, in that.
I don't think we've grown up, but I hope they just realized that, you know, they milked it as much as
they could.
Because
don't get me wrong, I love some of that, but I don't want that to be my entire... That would upset me if the game looks that amazing, but relies on this tone of, like, we're all fucking maniacs.
But you can see by the couple and how they're reacting to each other that, you know, there's a far more
mature,
like, chatty,
I hope
far
so.
Far more social. I'd say the writing's probably a good deal better. It's not slapstick, like you were saying. Yeah. It doesn't seem anything like that. Although the whole Florida thing and the kind of wacky characters, there's still going to be plenty of wacky characters.
Oh my God, yeah. And this is what I mean. I want them to do that because that's such a like Grand Theft Auto, that's its thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I also wanted to be like, okay, I'm in my mid-30s now. I kind of want to play it like I'm a bit more grown up. Do you know what I mean? And still have all the fun Grand Theft Auto shit that you can do. Like, you know, you know, 6 stars, SWAT, I'll hop on a tank, see how long I can survive. All that kind of shit. I want all that.
Wonder if there'll like be drones chasing you around the city.
Yeah. It'll be really cool. But speaking of the fact that now it's delayed to 2026 means that it's not going to win Game of the Year 2025. Mm-hmm. Is there... I mean, I know we're probably both on the same page. Expedition 33 is going to be... It's my game of the year so far. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you've played so far? We're 5 months in. That has maybe got a chance now that GTA 6 is not going to be releasing this year. Because let's face it...
I mean,
there'll
be plenty of good games, but they'll probably come out at the end of the year, you know?
Is there anything
like
you're expecting?
Ghost of Yodel is probably... Yota? Yeah, I mean, that could be... I'm generally not a fan of prequels, so I don't even know if I'm going to get this game,
you know?
But I mean, that has the potential, just if they get that right, to be a really, really big and good game. That Doom game looks really, really good.
Not Doom and Dune.
Like, there's a Dune game coming out at the end of this month. That's supposed to be a big deal. I saw a bit of gameplay for it. It just looks like an MMO kind of thing, you know, where you're like building bases and stuff like that. But
which
on Arrakis,
I could possibly.
I mean,
get
I like the idea of that,
idea.
But it seems like more of a PC thing than a console kind of game. But I mean, that doesn't mean it can't get Game of the Year. But both Doom and Dune. And then you'll have that Ghost game, and then I mean, I don't think Mario Kart will be anywhere near a Game of the Year.
See, this is the interesting thing about Mario Kart is because you were saying earlier on that you don't think it's going to be reviewed well at all. I think most outlets...
No, I think it'll get its usual 7.9 from IGN.
IGN are going to come out and give that game a 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 for sure.
I think they themselves will be aware of how much, and I don't like, do you know the way, like a track is wide and it's open and there's 24 cars.
Yes.
And what scares me about Mario Kart is there seems to be a lot of everyone is on the left or the right and on top of the rail. You know, that kind of Kingdom Hearts dream drop distance bullshit where when you go anywhere, went near any wall, you were just OP as fuck.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that all the shortcuts or best ways to get through maps aren't by grinding on these rails, because otherwise then it's just like a single wire is the track.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what's the point of having open world if the quickest routes are on this very narrow single file?
Yeah. That you don't really control as well.
That you don't control. You're just kind of on top of it, spinning around. I'm like, for me, that's a mistake having that type of shit in the game. But we'll have to see.
Yeah.
But I don't predict it to be the best Mario Kart. I think Mario Kart 8 set the bar too high and had so many great, amazing, wonderful tracks from different franchises that you just can't match that, even if it's visually slightly better, you know?
Yeah.
Well, but who knows? The weapons, the ice flower and the jump flower. I love that the feathers in it, you can jump.
Yeah.
But for game balance, I think that only makes the person in first place just way harder to catch.
Yeah.
Only the blue shell can hit him.
I think for me, I would be very surprised if anything this year can surpass the enjoyment I'm having with Expedition 33. Although I will wait and see. I think myself, Chris and Luke were talking about playing through Doom the Dark Ages.
Now that did look good. I only watched the trailer for yesterday and I went, I can't believe anyone is excited about Metroid. I just like, this looks great.
Yeah.
You know, it looks really, really good. Really,
really action-packed.
Fun.
Yeah, lots of fun.
Like all the stuff you can do with the shield. I thought that was brilliant, you know?
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to it because we were playing through lots of the Doom games before and I did lots of the 2D ones and then I hit like just 2016 Doom, which is called Doom. The game felt like crazy slow to me, even after playing like the fucking first person 2D ones on the Doom 1, 2, 3 for me were more exciting than the 2016 one. And I have to get back into Eternal and see it, but I'm hoping this is like just non-stop like great music, gory action with these deadly weapons. Like one of the weapons he has is like he puts a skull into a grinder and then fires the bones out of people. I was like, fuck yeah, this looks
it just does
cool.
Exactly what it says in the tin, doesn't it? Those games, it's simple, it's fun, but like I would get those. That's the type of game I'd pick up if it was free. You know, I would never pay money for a game like that.
Yeah,
it doesn't interest me.
What we're hoping for is Luke is for the month of, or at least for the next month, I think Luke is Mr. Games Pass, Xbox Games Pass himself. And because of that, I think he gets it, you know, day one launch.
Well,
so myself and Chris were like, oh, we'll just we'll just play, we'll come over and we'll play your one, right? Like, because we were kind of thinking, like, we could all buy it and play through, but I think it might be a bit more fun, like we did with some of the other games we've done before, where we'll sit down and just play it, like, together, like, pass over the controller or someone else. Just like, just
it is a great way to play, right?
Yeah, for sure. Craig, I think that's it for the episode for us. We've done quite well talking about absolutely nothing.
That took, sorry, time just fucking flies when you're, like,
and when you're having fun. There is no episode next week. I'm away. I'm off to Slovenia, so there will be no episode next week. Sorry, folks. You'll have to wait until the week after to get more from us. But if you are interested, if anybody here in Ireland is going to Gamerfest on the 25th of May, I'll be there trying to, you know, flog the podcast on people, as many strangers as I can. We might see you there. And for the post show today, I'm going to talk to Craig about my backlog of games that I always want to play but never can. And if you want to check that out, go to patreon.com/thegiftofgaming for the price of a coffee a month. There's tons of extra stuff there. Craig, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for letting me vent about games. It's always great.
My pleasure. And to our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.